I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Achten Millwall.
Listening to Achten Millwall Emergency Broadcasting Special, a public service broadcast made on behalf of the Real Millwall Fan Show and Achten Millwall, broadcasting from South Bermondsey.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome to the world-famous Achten Millwall. Delighted to have you with us. Hope you're safe, hope you're healthy, hope you are well. My name is Aaron Paul. Joining me this afternoon to look back at another career of a fabulous Lions player is the podfather himself, Mr. Nick Hart. You're up, pal.
I'm fantastic. Thank you, Aaron. It's great to have Stuart on the show today. It's wonderful. I'm really looking forward to it.
There you go. He's bust my introduction already. Joining us today is a proper Londoner. Someone who spent seven seasons at Millwall. Of course, joined from Spurs initially on loan, and then a month later decided he loved the place so much, joined Millwall on a permanent deal, made 242 appearances for the Lions and had some good times at the Den. Of course, we're talking about the man himself, Man Mountain, Stuart Nethercott. Stuart, how are you, pal?
Yeah, good, bud. Very good. Ready to go. Ready to go. So
good to have you with us. Of course, firstly, let's just touch on your new appointment as manager of Heybridge Swifts in these dodgy times. A project you're, I presume, looking forward to.
Yeah, it was. It came as a surprise. I went and was assistant manager last year with Carl Dudweed, who the ex-Colchester player. He'd taken over from Julian Dix, who went on to West Brom with Slaven Bilic. I was surprised really to get the job. I was speaking to him a couple of weeks ago, was preparing for the new season, whenever that was. And he decided to call it a day after, enjoying time with his family and with a young family he's got. He thought after 28 years in football, it's time for him to step away for a year or so. But surprise. I took a little break, a week off after the announcement, but now I'm back in full swing and talking to players, current players, and targets as well that we've got for next season as well. So it's all coming ahead at this present time.
We're all looking forward to sort of tracking your progress down. I know Nick's going to be looking forward to coming and watching the game. In fact, I think we'll all pop down. We'll have a little day out.
Definitely. We've got a new bar set up. We've got a new bar all done.
That's what we want.
Demolished the old one, put a new one in, and we haven't had the chance to use it yet. So it's all really up and running, and it's got plenty of good beer on the stock.
Good. That's what we want.
It sounds fantastic, Stuart. Yeah.
Beginning with your obviously, you started your career at Spurs, spent 7 years there as a pro. I don't know when you joined there as a young boy, but you probably worked with some very, very good defenders in your time there.
Yeah, I was lucky. I think if you look back on people's careers, top players, I'm not a top player, but they'd always say you work when you work with the best pros, you know, coming through the ranks and things like that. We had a great set of pros, you know. Gazza was there, Paul Stewart was there, Gary Mabrook was there, Paul Walsh. You know, they were great lads, and they weren't ones that would, you know, not they would hit you by the wayside. They used to take time and talk to you about your game and things like that. And a lot of them you'd play in the reserve team with. Some of them were coming back from injury, and you know, really, really good times. And I put it down to myself breaking in at Spurs, down to the pros that were there and actually took time to speak to you and talk to you. Neil Ruddock was another one, come through the ranks. Obviously, he went off to Liverpool. Steve Sedgley was another one. Gary Mabrook, Colin Calder was one of the later ones. But yeah, that's a really good centre-halves to look at and to work with as well.
Well, just one of the things that struck me, Stu, I mean, you touched on some of the great players, some of the great managers you've played under at Tottenham, and obviously, you know, at Millwall. But looking at Spurs, I mean, Terry Venables, Osvaldo Ardiles, and some of the players. I mean, I was interested that you know, the likes of Gascoigne and Mabbott and the others would actually engage with as a young player. I guess you were just a kid at the time, you know.
Yeah, during I was second year apprentice and. Gazza was going off to Lazio, and he needed game time to prove his fitness and things like that. And we stayed back. All the apprentices stayed back and giving them weeks of game time and things like that. And you know, the fella he was, he went off to the cash point and all give us 50 quid each. You know what I mean? That was more than what we got a week to sell. So. Top class, as they all were, they were top class pros, and you know, I owe a lot to them, to be fair.
I mean, Venables was obviously would go on to the Euro 1996 tournament with his reputation. How did you find him as a manager? I mean, he always strikes me as a top coach, you know, Barcelona any time.
Yeah, he was ahead of his time, you know what I mean? I think he was probably one of the first managers at that number 10 role, and Teddy was the one that sort of played that position for Spurs, went on to do it for England, and it just showed in that Euro 96 with Shearer and Sheringham how good that formation was. And a lot of teams couldn't play against it. You know, they struggled to play against it. And, it worked marvellous for England and for Spurs. So we had Nicky Barnby as well in that sort of position. So it was, he was ahead of his time. You know, he trusted the youth. He went into youth, and it was just a sad day, really, that he felt he had to compete with Alan Sugar to try and run the club. And Terry should never have gone down that route. He should have just stayed the manager, and let Sir Alan do what he's got, do what he does best as well. So it was sad when he left, but Ozzy came in and took the reins over.
I mean, I've got so many sort of Spurs managerial questions because that era under Alan Sugar was so interesting. Yeah. But obviously, this is a Millwall podcast. But just a couple of little ones. Firstly, Christian Gross, was he as nutty as people say? Secondly, was Gerry Francis' hair as dodgy? I mean, what is that mullet thing all about?
Yeah.
And the pigeons.
Well, let's go with Gerry first. This is a manager that was so drilled defensively. You know, under Ozzy, we did ship a few goals in, and you know, you had your famous five, and we was called the shit six and all that. So, you know, we were, you know, our defence at that time was myself, Sol Campbell, Justin Edinburgh, Dean Austin, and you know, we were shipping goals in for fun, you know what I mean? First game of the season when Sheffield Wednesday 4-3 and things like that. So that was Ozzy's way. Gerry come in and he had his ways. He wanted to go the defensive route. He'd run us every Tuesday, Terror Tuesday, that was cool. That was hard graft, box to box running, got a fitter. And I think it paid off really for our group of players. Going on to Christian, you know, when he turned up with a rail card, you knew there wasn't something right here. he was the one that, you know, I wasn't going to be hanging around for, really. David Pleat was the director of football at the time and said, I think you should move on. And, he was a strange fella. And it doesn't surprise me, he's not in the game now. And, he was just one of them appointments that Sir Alan got wrong. But, I think we can all sort of, you know, the next one, you know, he brought George Graham in, which was another, you know, strange decision. But he got the discipline back into that side and, they went on to win a trophy.
How did you find working with Ozzy Ardiles, Stuart? I mean, a World Cup winning player with Argentina. Yeah. With a man with, as you've touched on, the famous five style, the all-out attack.
Yeah.
How was he as a manager from your perspective, your playing perspective?
Yeah, he was good with the youngsters. He had a philosophy of how to play. Again, probably ahead of his times. You know, he sort of played a diamond system, which is something I sort of play. We played in my team sort of last year at Heybridge. Good formation if you can work it, and we had good players on the could pass the ball. The two Romanians come in, Dimitrescu, Popescu, Darren Anderton was around, and he had Nicky Hazard in that little area in front of us. But we, you know, it was tough defensively, you know, because we didn't have 2 men that wanted to run back. So that was we had a few runaround, but fair play to Ozzy. He had his style of play and he wasn't going to change it. So that was all or nothing with Ozzy. And I like that. That was a gamble that he took, and it did effectively cost his job.
I mean, one thing that strikes me, Stuart, obviously, you know, you've got the glamour of Tottenham, the White Hart Lane, the big names, the Klinsmanns, the Ardiles and the Venables and all the rest. But I mean, you went out on a couple of real contrasting loans there, Maidstone United and Barnet, I'm guessing to get game time, to get regular starts. But that's quite a contrast. I mean, it was quite a brave decision to go out and get time at those kinds of clubs.
Yeah, I think what it was at the time, I think I was just finished my second year of Prem, so I was a first year pro. And I just think it should happen now. This is how it should happen now. A Premiership lad, 17, 18, should go off and apply his trade in a second division club, you know. And, you know, I'm talking about, you know, the old fourth division, you know.
I was bottom of the
fourth division, so you can't get any lower. I'm playing against people like Billy Whitehurst. You know, they're tough cookies. And I'm a skinny 18-year-old and I'm getting absolutely kicked the shit out of every Saturday. But it made me. And it can make or break you. I think it made me. And to be fair, the season after, I was actually I made my debut. So it done something for me. It was something that they liked to do at that sort of time of era. They're not so much now. I think they're a little bit timid, some of these boys, to go down and have a look at the lower leagues. I think they get it a little bit too early now, the money-wise, the cars, the houses, or whatever. But it sorted me out, and that's all that, you know, I saw at the time. It was a good decision. I had 3 months of washing my own kit.
Grounded,
where I was like cleaning the drape, change rooms, cleaning the boots. Now I'm absolutely cleaning my own kit as well. So they were good lads. You know, I keep in touch with a few of them Maidstone boys. They're good lads, and you know, they're pleased that they saw me break into the Spurs side.
Yeah,
I mean, going on from that, obviously, you know, making the move to Millwall, going from a Premier League club to a second division club, that is quite a drop. With all due respect, I mean, do you reckon that the loans at Maidstone's and the Barnets actually sort of like helped you and opened your eyes to, which, let's be fair, some footballers in this day and age, they would never consider that. They would refuse to do that drop if they're playing for a Premier League club.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think the Millwall thing come about. I was kicking around in the reserves. You know, obviously that Christian Gross was never gonna accept me. You know, he's never gonna happen. It was myself, Dean Austin, Justin Edinburgh, regulars in the first. You're just kicking around in the reserves and just waiting for that right moment to leave. The pull of London was always, you know, the one for me. Staying in London was always a good thing. And sometimes I look at it and I think the way I played, the style of play, probably wasn't the way the Spurs fans would really want. I was a bit hair and tear, head it, kick it sort of defender. And I think the Millwall crowd, it suited me. It was that sort of place, tough upbringing, tough place to go and play. And I think that suited me. And the club, the surroundings and everything about it, it was just a match made in heaven, really. You know, and it was a big gamble, a massive gamble at the time. But I felt at the time it was the right decision to just get games and enjoy my football again.
Did you have any other options available at that time, Stuart? I mean, you
didn't just... really, because I was on loan and I broke my collarbone at Fulham
right.
in one of the games. So, you know, looking back on it now, you know, what Millwall done for me at that time was really good, because they could have said, sorry, son, there's no contracts on offer, you know, and then I'm back to square one again. But Theo, he stood by me. I think they saw enough in me in the games that I played.
Yeah.
That I was going to be okay. It sort of worked in my favour and the club's favour to sort of deal out. I took the deal and, was pleased to be rolling back when pre-season started.
Well, I remember seeing you when you first came. It was 1998, I believe. And I remember seeing you thinking, you know, obviously I didn't know you from the Spurs time, but I remember seeing you thinking, this player looks like a Millwall player. You had that look, you had that physicality, leadership.
Yeah.
Everything that was missing, if I'm going to be honest, because we were mid-table in the third tier at that point, going, you know, looking iffy, but you brought an immediate presence, and that's what Millwall fans want. And
it was, looking at it, you know, when you retire and things like that, the club at the time was in a sticky position. They had a manager that didn't really want at the helm, and
yes,
you know, we were like, you know, it was just one of them times. You know, Billy at the time, you know, great player for West Ham, and you know, as I said earlier, Spurs done it with George Graham, and they were never, them sort of managers are never ever going to succeed or can succeed, but the fans were never admitted they succeeded. So
yeah.
Billy was in a hiding to nothing, but you know, the foundations were set there with the youth, with the boys coming through. The foundations were really good, and I was hopefully going to be part of that
rebuild,
and being more experienced than what the ones that was coming through at the time.
How, just before we move along, if I may, Stuart, I mean, how was Billy Bonds as a manager? I mean, from your perspective, you've played under some greats. I mean, I always got the impression that he was actually not a bad manager, given a difficult situation, difficult circumstances.
Yeah, I think Billy sort of surrounded himself with experienced players. He did like an experienced player. You know, I'll go back, we had Kenny Brown, we had Andy Gray, Paul Allen, you know, Paul Wilkinson.
Yeah,
you know, we had some experienced boys in that dressing room, and you know, and I think their time had come. The club had looked at it and probably thought, you know, we need to get some young blood into this team and a young management team to go with that. But Billy was fine. One of the fittest managers I've played with.
Really, really.
Yeah,
okay.
You know, 40, 42, whatever he was at the time, and he was probably the wrong place to be, but you know, the next decision was probably the one that needed to be done, and they went down the route that they did, and rest of history.
I mean, just going back to Billy, this is actually to both of you. Obviously, you know, his fallout from his time at West Ham was sort of very well documented, and he felt shafted with the club. And I was fine with that club, you know, in terms of how they treat some of their greats. From Bobby Moore's a really sort of evident, prevalent example. Do you think that Bonds came to Millwall to sort of spite West Ham to an extent?
Yeah, you could be spot on there, mate. I think it left a bitter taste in his mouth. I know that by conversations that I had with him during my time with him. He wouldn't go back there. He was never going to go and watch a game. His mother had a season ticket there as well. I think she refused to go as well. So what happened there was quite, you know, whatever happened there with him and Harry, you know, it's all under the carpet now. But I think it hurt him. And you're probably right in your way to say, you know, he come to us to spite them, and you're probably spot on there. And but he lived in Kent, you know. There's other reasons around it. He lives in Kent. He only lived up the road from the training grounds, so that I think pulled him as well. So I think he was hurt with the West Ham thing.
I think, I mean, from the Millwall perspective, I always. My own view is that he was harshly judged because of his West Ham connections. And I still think that even to this day, you know, he was dealing with a club that was in just come out of administration. There was no money. You know, we were having to make the best of a bad situation. And he signed some players, yourself included.
Yeah. The atmosphere wasn't great there. The home game wasn't great.
Very low crowds. Yeah.
You've got a brand new stadium that's just laying there with 5,000 crowds in it. You know, the chairman react on that. And I think, you know, away from home, the fans were brilliant. I remember that day at Fulham when I dislocated my shoulder. You know, the whole end was covered in Millwall. It was an unbelievable turnout. But at home, it just didn't really happen. It really was dire. And, you know, I did look back at that time and think, have I made the right move here, really? You look at it and think, is this ever going to improve? And, you know, thankfully, it all improved.
I mean, moving on, after Billy Bonds, you know, we saw the arrival of Keith Stevens. I mean, legendary player at the Den. Obviously, had a two-year spell in charge as manager, and half that with Alan McCleary. What was that like as you know, playing for a legend, effectively playing for someone who bled Millwall?
Yeah, but it's what the club needed at the time. It's what the players needed. I think the remit was got to bring the youth through the system. I think the club was starting to struggle financially. The days of bringing a Paul Wilkinson in and Paul Goddard and players like that, well, were over. And I think the club needed to have a year of consolidation. And that's what they got. You know, they got a refreshment of youth, abundance of youth coming through the system. You know, you never get that again at that club where you had so many boys in that youth team pushing for first team places and getting in first team places. It was good to see. And that was a good mould. You know, I was coming back from injury and I was seeing it from the outside, how it was all panning out. And then once you got yourself into the team, then we could see how really good these boys really were.
I was just going to ask you on that point, Stuart. I mean, you know, youth coming through, but what youth? I mean, Tim Cahill, Neil Harris, Lucas Neal, these are top players, and to have them being developed is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the spine of the promotion team was largely assembled that 98-99 season under Ryan, really, including yourself and Robbie Ryan and the others.
He was unlucky, Ryan and Macca. They were unlucky with what they done with us to do what we done. I just felt that where we progressed from season to season, we lost to the playoffs to Wigan was a tough
night. Yeah, yes.
That was a tough night.
Yeah.
Because the chances we had at home to kill them off. But they were a good Wigan side, to be fair. You know, strong boys at the back. Arjen Dazou, very, very good centre-halves. And they were a tough, they were a tough act. And you think about the money that, that the fella was putting in there, you know. JJB. Is it JJB?
Yeah, the Whelan, isn't it? Yeah, Whelan, the sports. So,
you know, he was paying a lot of money into that, and they needed to go up, you know. And I think the following season, where we missed out, we started to bring a couple of older heads in. We brought the Moody's in, Deutsche come in, and we had to get promoted. That was how it looked from the outside in. We had to get promoted that season because of the money that was put into that for that season, because we made it when we made a massive amount of money in that auto windscreen trophy. And I think that was the turning. That was the turning. And we didn't start off well that season. We had a couple of good results. And then you could see results dipping. And that was when they decided that the two should go.
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously a difficult situation. I think in retrospect, it was the right decision, because you're looking back, crystal clear hindsight. I just want to ask your opinion, really. I mean, the kind of Neil Harris of this era was on fire as a finisher, as a player. For me, in my time, I've been at Mill a long time, the best striker, apart from maybe only Teddy Sheringham, can top him. You know, how far would you think he would have gone but for the illness? You know, I know that might be a difficult question, but it must play on his mind as well. But how far do you think he could have gone?
I think, we had the great season of the promotion, and obviously, you know, talk was about if players were going to stay, was going to go, but we was all under contract, and we all had everything planned out for the next season. And then you get the news in the summer, your top goal scorer has been diagnosed with
cancer. Yeah.
Cancer, and that's tough. You know, as a group of boys, we were very, very close, and that is a tough call. And then you're thinking about him, and then you're thinking, shit, fucking hell, where's the goals going to come next year?
Yeah.
You know, but it must come into his mind, you know. But he come to us. He was a chubby non-league, typical non-league player. But what he had, when they got himself fit, when they got him back, he was in full-time training and things like that. You know, then you could see what a player he was. You know, he was one of them players I didn't really enjoy marking. He was too wriggly for me, and he was tough to mark. But I think he could have gone higher.
I agree.
I just think it was the next progression, and probably when he sees the boys like Cahill, Reid, Eiffel, Lucas Neal, you know, all going off and doing their bits in the Prem, it must sort of come to him and think, you know, I wish I'd had my time.
Well, it's a measure of that squad there, Stuart, that, you know, you've got the likes of Harris and Stephen Reid, Tim Cahill, Paul Ifill, all of whom went on to, you know, to greater things, so to speak. Yeah. That was an amazing squad. When you look at that side, that classic 2000-2001 championship winning team, what an amazing side to have played in.
Yeah. It was made easy, and you know, defensively we were solid, and you know, with big time behind us, you know, the team never changed much. And I think that was where the good thing about it, you know, you looked at it and thought Lawrence, Nevercott, Dyche, Ryan, Eiffel, Reid, Livermore, Cahill, Harris, Sadler, Clarence towards the end. But, you know, you could ring that off, you know, and then you had your backups, you had your Joe Dolans, you know, excellent backup, you know, become a first team regular, you know, he could have played 300 games if he hadn't had these bad injuries. You know, there was some good backup players, and it was a heck of a squad, and, you know, thoroughly enjoyed that season, and all went off together on holiday, enjoyed ourselves, and then we knew the hard work was going to begin when we got back.
Well, you mentioned Sean Dyche there, Stuart. I mean, at the time, he's got on to great things in management in the very top levels now. It always intrigues me. I mean, you've played alongside him and other players. I mean, does it strike you at the time that this bloke has got the potential to manage, or how does it feel at the time? Would you have said he's a possible manager of the future at that point?
Yeah, I think if you look around dressing rooms and things like that, when you come out of playing and things like that, and you get asked these questions, I think he was one. I think he was definitely one you would have took. Harris, not a chance. That was never going to happen. You know, that was just a ticking time bomb. But no, I didn't see it happening. I just did not see that happening. But fair play to him. He went off. He'd done all his badges, learned the game. And I think he was actually doing it when he was playing as well. So he learnt the game, and you know it helps when you're playing and you're doing them badges, because you see the manager's aspects of things, and your roles reverse, sort of thing. So yeah, I was surprised in that one. Matty Lawrence, I may have gone into that, but I think he's more media.
Yeah,
very clever boy, you know, brainy boy, degrees. But other than that, no, there wasn't many I could say.
Okay.
Especially in Tenerife at 4 a.m.
just building off the back of that, and looking at the chat that we had with Steve Claridge the other week. Yeah. I mean, when Dave Tuttle got given the Millwall manager's job, you must have just sat there and thought, shit, you know, what's going on here?
Well, I wasn't at the club at the time, so it was a shock, you know. Again, just, you know, I thought it was becoming a comedy club. That was a strange one. But did Steve take over for a while?
About 3 or 4 weeks, I think.
Yeah, that's right. He took over, didn't he? Yeah, so you know, it was a funny old time.
Tuttle was a shock for me in the West, staying up and looking down on it. Oh, I tell you that much, Stuart.
I don't know where the club was going with that one. I really didn't understand that. You know, I was with Tuts at Spurs, and I didn't get where the club was going with that. I think that was strange times at the club then. And you know, that was the disappointing things. I think the boys, you know, we felt we got the club into a good position into the Championship, and it just felt like all that effort had just been tossed away by people's decisions to bring people in, and you know, the success of the FA Cup and going into Europe, and then after that you got a relegation, which was, you know, sad times. That's sad times, really. And you know, there was a lot of terrible stuff going on with the chairman at the time, and it wasn't a good place to be.
I mean, looking at it though, you know, after the promotion with Mark McGee, you go into the Championship, narrowly miss out on the first division playoffs, and obviously, you know, the season after that you finished ninth. Looking at those players, Tim Cahill's, you look at obviously Neil Harris, the Peckham Beckham, Darren Ward, you know, you had Dion Dublin in there for a bit, Kevin Davison on loan, Claridge is firing goals. Did that squad underachieve?
I think a promoted winning side and being champions, I think you sort of, you're on a crest of a wave from that. So that gets you through. That gets you through probably half the season. Now, in that half the season, we had a couple of blips, but then first game of the season, we rolled Norwich over 4-1. And then obviously we had a couple of sloppy defeats, and Man City, I think, come to the den, and we got beat by them. But then we went to Palace, and I think that made us, I think, you know, beating Palace at Palace was the turning point, because we all looked at ourselves in the dressing room and gone, we ain't bad. We are not bad. We've got two boys up front who are going to score us goals. Yep. Defensively, all right, we're going to be put under pressure, you know, but we can cope. We ain't, you know, we can do this. And I think from that game on, the drive it took on every game. From that game on, we knew we could roll up anywhere and grab 3 points. And that's virtually what happened. All right, we lost games. We had a horrible run towards the end, you know what I mean, at places. But, you know, to finish where we finished in that season, I still think we probably, we were batting above our station, really. You know, we was, well, all right, you reeled off the names, but Dion was only with us for 4 games, 5 games. Kev Davis was not the greatest. I need to admit that. He wasn't his fittest. And it didn't work out. It just did not work out. It was a poor loan signing. I know, you know, I've been away with Kev. You know, I've seen him, you know, years ago. He spoke about his time. He just wasn't fit. And that was a gamble. So, looking back on it, as I said, I think we were punching above our weight, really, in finishing where we finished.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Achten Millwall.
One thing I just wanted to ask you, I mean, you've played in some big games at Spurs. You'd played in North London Derby, I think, Chelsea, Spurs, games of that, you know, fairly large magnitude. I'm always interested to know what the then on its night, I'm just looking at the Wolves game here, the 1-0 win over Wolves, which from the crowd felt like an immense atmosphere. How is it when you're out there on the pitch? What does it feel like? When I've been on the pitch, it feels like a claustrophobic trap almost. What's it like to play
that's
in?
That's what we wanted to do. We had the Oldham game where it was, you know, relaxed and the flags are out and, you know, we won 4 or 5 that day.
Yeah.
And then that's what we wanted to come. We wanted to come to this club and to see it rocking and big crowds. And that's what we got. You know, evening games are very, very special. I used to love the evening games. It was a special place, especially when you got Wolves rocking up there. I think we had West Brom.
The
Birmingham game comes, you know, which I don't want to talk much about. Good times, you know, and as you say, they are like your 12th man. And, you know, and I think if they can see you're putting a shift in, and that's all it is, you know, certain clubs, all they want is for teams to put a decent shift in. And that's what we've done. Every single one of us put a decent shift in. And you get the response of the crowd. And that's what we got.
A lot of football is driven on personality. They have to be, you know, up front. We spoke to Clary the other week. How did you find working with the likes of Theo Pathetis and Mark McGee and maybe our last Steve Clary? How are these people to deal with on a working basis from the players' side?
Mark's been one of the best that I've worked with, to be quite honest with you. His management skills were totally spot on. Really, really decent fella.
Yeah.
He had the backing of late Ray Harford and Steve Gritt at the time. He was very, very good. And, you know, it wasn't as big a squad as what it is now, you know. So he didn't really have a lot of moaning players. I think we all sort of, if you got out the side, you take it and you work harder in training to get yourself back in there. There was a definitely push. There was an edge to our training. You know, everybody put a brilliant shift in training. You know, train hard, play hard is always a good motto to have. Theo was, good character.
Yeah.
I don't think he liked the agent side of football. I don't think he really got on with many of them. But no, he was brilliant. We went to obviously the auto windscreen game. We all upset with the performance and the result. Headed back to West London hotel there, and he's dancing on the table. So it's I'm in the chair, but we're dancing on the table with you. So it was all good fun. He had a lot of heart for you, and he had a lot of heart for the club. And so he may have got a rough deal in certain parties of the club, but I think what he'd done, you know, rescued the club and put it back on the map, really. And Claridge, I've got no qualms with Steve. He was a popular boy around the place. Loved a bet. you'd see his car in the car park, and he'd have all hangers in there, all these suits, shirts, and things like that. God knows where he'd stay after the time. But on the pitch, he was a proper lad, proper fella, worked hard. You know, you could tell even at his age, I think we had him when he was 36.
36, wasn't he? Yeah.
36. So,
yeah.
You know, he played on for another 3 or 4 years after that. So, and he worked hard. He worked hard. And once that ball was up to him, it stuck.
Yeah.
You knew it wasn't coming back your way.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Really enjoyed it.
Some characters in that team. When you mentioned Claridge, I mean, we've spoken in the past to Tony Warner. I mean, these are larger than life characters, Stuart, aren't they? I mean, what were the Christmas parties like, mate? What were the holidays in Tenerife like?
Was it Tenerife then?
We were very, very close. We were a very close-knit squad. Still are now.
Yeah. You're still in touch.
Yeah, all on the WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
You know, the banter flies around all the time. Mark Burchan's head of the banter brigade. But no, this is good. And Christmas parties was the normal. Up in London.
Yeah.
It's what it is. But we used to go away a lot as soon as the season finished. We got to IB for Tenerife, Costa del Sol, we used to go in Magaluf and places like that.
Yeah.
Me being the older one, I just wanted to get home, you know what I mean? I just wanted to get home. Oh, I used to go duck myself round to the travel agents and book myself a flight home. So
I was just admiring your stamina.
3 days was enough. I mean, 3 days. I don't want to spend no more time on these. 7 days is more than enough. 3 days was more than enough. So, we went out together after a game, and I was one of the older statesmen.
I was going to say,
child and partner at the time. And, it was tough to sort of get these nights out. But, you know, when we did them, we done them in style, to be fair.
I mean, your last season with the club, 2003-04, we've now got Dennis Wise and Ray Wilkins, the joint management duo. I mean, you only made 12 appearances that season. I suppose the emergence of the Darren Walder, Matt Lawrence kind of duo in central defence started to put you to one side.
Yeah, I think there was another crop of defenders coming through. Robbo was coming through at the time.
Robinson,
Alan Dunn was coming through at the time. So, you know, there was the squad was starting to go their separate ways. And, I was sort of managed out in a way that, Dennis, 12 games was probably, I'm surprised it was even that amount, really. But he had his own ideas and he wanted his own players in, and that was fine by me. He dragged me up a couple of times up north and didn't really agree with that, where he just, I was left in the stands and things like that. So,
right.
Disappointed in that way, and Tony Adams come in for me at Wickham, and I thought that was a good fix for me for the last couple of years of my career, really. So it ended a little bit sour, But, yeah. You know, I've got no qualms about that now. I'm big enough and ugly enough to not worry about them sort of things now. So. Yeah.
There's another great name you just dropped in, Tony Adams. I mean, it's quite a list of names you've worked with over your career, really.
The thing was, for Billy Bonds to fancy you and then Tony Adams to fancy you, again, you must be doing something right. So
absolutely,
he was strange, he was a strange fella, and you know, I was at Wickham, I was coming to the end of my career.
Yeah,
and we were sort of the bottom. I think we were looking like we were going down, and we were three down. We were three down at home to Blackpool, and if this was Millwall, I'm looking back and thinking, "Fucking hell, we're going to get battered here." But they clapped you off the pitch. I would have been spat out. I would have been kicked out. But that's what it was, the mentality. You go into the dressing room and you think to yourself, come on, Tom, you see the old Tony Adams.
Hairdryer.
He's kicking and shitting, yeah. You know what I mean? You know, screaming. But he weren't like that. He changed. And he wasn't the manager that I thought he would be. You know, we went on another trip, Kidderminster away. This is the following season. And obviously with his alcoholic problems and things like that, I was captain at the time. I said to him, Tony, is it all right if we have a couple of beers on the way home? You know, bring a crate on or something like that. he was like, no. So I'm thinking to myself, come on, lads, it's just... Because on the coaches then, you used to have a back bit. And used to draw the curtains. You used to play the cards.
I've been on that coach, yeah.
Yeah. And now we've got what's up. We smuggle a load of our beers on and things like that. We're all having a drink and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, like this, the coach has done a sharp break. And all of a sudden, like, all these bottles have gone off the table. They're rolling down the front right next to his feet. He's actually controlled one underneath his foot. I was dragged up the next morning. And, another career.
Career ending moment.
But it didn't work out for Tony there either.
No.
He left after about 3 or 4 months. I don't think he'd handled the league or the players that he had to work with. And it was sad. It was a sad time. And then John Gorman coming, who I knew really well with the Spurs situation.
Mm.
And then, you know, my legs were just going. And I thought, I can't really do this full-time lark anymore. So I called it a day and went to Woking for 6 months. And thoroughly enjoyed my time there. You know, a bit of part-time football. Enjoyed it there. Got to the FA Trophy final. And then that was my last game.
And you're managing now, Stuart, at Heybridge. We were just speaking before we started doing this recording at Heybridge. I mean, management is... I mean, you've mentioned Tony Adams. It didn't work for Tony Adams, and there was a great, great player. Management is a different thing, isn't it? I mean, it's you are separate from the group. You're not one of the boys that goes on the weekenders and all the rest of it. You've picked, you know, what kind of manager are you, would you say? I mean, you've worked with some great names. How do you try to approach the game? What's your philosophy of management, so to speak?
I think you've got to, you can't go in and all guns blazing. You can't do that now. They're not what they used to be. Players are not what they used to be.
Right.
But it's still the same way where one needs an arm round and one you can, you know, get into. I still think you need your old school values. You don't really want to manage how the FA want you to manage. You know, I mean, you've got to be your own person. And you know, we all go on these coaching badges and they tell you, hey, you should be doing this. And once you come away from there, right, you take a little bit from it, but then you rip up the rule book and you go back to how you think you should do it yourself.
Yeah.
So you're out there to be shot. It's a tough game. It's a tough game. You know, I've people like Daichi Chopra, you know, managing in that sort of environment, you know, fair play to him. It's tough where I am, you know, I'm scrimping around a tenner for a player or something, like, you know, finding an extra 20 quid for someone, you know. It's tough. You know, it must be tough for them boys, you know, they're working with millionaires.
This is it, isn't it? You know, it's a different. I was just thinking as you're talking earlier on with your stories. You know, players of your vintage, you straddle two very different eras. You're just on the cusp of the modern game in a way.
Yeah.
Where now you've got this millionaire zone, especially at the top level. But you can see both sides of it. You've seen that side and the Heybridge side, so to speak. You know,
it is good because where I am at the moment is, you know, you get your hands dirty and it's tough, you know what I mean? And you're trying to big up your players and you want your players to stay with you and, you know, you put an arm around one and then it's tough. And as you said, with the money situation where we were just on the cusp of that, you know, but the memories we've got, I see it's more than that. But your Timmy's, your Stephen Reed's, you know, they went on and cracked it and probably don't have to work again in their life. So, you know, that's what it is. You know, they don't have to work again in their lives. But hopefully, we put them on that sort of path to doing that. You know, we was in a successful side. You know, teams come and watch a successful side. You know, Souness was regularly at our games, and that's where Lucas Neal went, Stephen Reid went, you know, to Blackburn. And it was all because you're in a successful side and you're doing well.
Who was your favourite defensive partner across your career, Stuart?
Sean's got to be up there. Sean's got to be the one, I think. I think there was something there that, you know, you get a grasp for. You know, we didn't have any pace. You know, we were good at that's what you need. You didn't really need pace in that era, you know what I mean? It was all about competitive edge and you know, the will to win, and you know, he covered me, I covered him, and you know, we had two decent fullbacks alongside us as well, Robbie and Matty. So
absolutely
and obviously Tony behind us as well. It was a successful five, and you know, we played a lot of games together, and won a lot of games together.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Looking at some of our quick fire sort of questions that we go for, your pre-match meal. I know nutrition's changed over the years, but go on, enlighten us.
Chicken and beans for me, mate.
Not full English. That's what I know.
I was going down the right route. No.
It's all right. I mean, I think we had Tony Cascarino, who came out with a crazy one the other week. It was something absolutely revolting. What was in it?
Oh, he had ham sandwiches dipped in hot chocolate. Which I thought was mental. But I spoke to Brian King the other day, the old 70s goalkeeper, and they would all go and have a full English. But that's the reason I asked you. They'd have a full English before a game. Yeah.
If I was at Spurs, it probably would have been a full English, because in the early 90s, that's where it was. But as I went on, as you went on, which is strange because you've left an old Division 1 side and going down, your diet got better as you was going down. It got better as you was going down. But chicken and beans was me.
Chicken and beans.
Yeah, chicken and beans.
Footballers are superstitious creatures by reputation, Stuart. Did you have any pre-match superstitions or rituals or things you'd wear?
It wasn't as bad as Clarence. I bet Clarence would do all day, wouldn't he? I used to be sick every before.
Did you?
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I was a little bit of a nervous character, really, and just sort of bubbling. The old chicken and beans was bubbling up.
Did you never think to yourself, maybe I should jack in the baked beans?
Yeah, I know.
The Heinz aren't doing it for me.
It was something that, you know, the boys laugh about it now, and it was just Mark McGee would be doing his team talk, and all you could hear is me in the background going, "Whoa." So that's come out a few times, that one. So, But other than that, just keep it to routine. What if we got a win, I'll keep it a routine. Just do the same as what you've done the week before, really, until it run out.
You played on adrenaline only then, Stuart, really, didn't you? Your time, you haven't lost your, you know, your, the contents of your belly beforehand. You're on adrenaline.
It's something, but then I've seen it later on, not in football, but I watch a lot of rugby and I've seen the Lions tour and things like that. When it's all finished, they do a compilation. And you can hear the same going on in a Lions dressing room. You know what I mean? It's nervous energy and it needs to come out. That is what it was. It was something that I've done and continue to do.
Right. This is always a tough one. The best manager you played under?
Well, I think Mark's got to be there. Obviously, I was lucky with Terry, but I didn't really have a long time with Terry. But I think Mark, hands down, has been the inspiration, you know, for myself and probably a lot of the boys from that era would come out with that. And you know, he was a special fella. And the way it ended was a shame, but I think he should be up there in folklore with the Millwall fans and what actually he achieved there, because I think his win percentage was very, very good.
And so by the same token, got to ask the opposite. Who's the worst manager you played under?
Christian Gross, I've got to say that. I'll pull that round to him, really.
Yeah.
You know,
Clash of cultures.
I don't want to put Tony Adams in that situation because Tony Adams was a top player, and I'll never want to shy that away from him. He was a top player. Didn't work out for him management wise, but now Christian Gross for sure. And I think a lot of Spurs players at that time would come out with that answer as well.
Favorite ground you played at?
Wembley, I think, mate. I think seeing 55,000 of you lot there, I think that makes it a little bit more special. I think it's a special day. I think you've got the old Wembley, you know, special place, really, you know.
What was your worst moment in football, Stuart? What was the lowest point for you?
I think that Birmingham night has got to be up there. You know, the circumstances. I've not even watched that game over. I've not even seen the goal. You had jubilation of drawing at Birmingham and then just... This didn't turn up on the night of that night, and that's big regrets. That's something I'll always look back on and think, what if sort of scenario. And you know, it was a tough night, and the club didn't, you know, try to recover after that, but it was quite hard.
Let's finish it off with a good memory. Let's have your best moment in football, pal.
Yeah, I think the Oldham game. Sticks out, you know, many fixtures that I've played in at Millwall, you know, some special nights there, you know, even we've lost against Wigan in that cup final, that was a special day. But I think the Oldham day when you're captain of your football club in front of your own fans and you lift the trophy above your head with your teammates around, it's a very, very special day.
It was a wonderful day as a fan. I can tell you that much, Stuart.
That's the 5-0, wasn't it?
We finished 5-0.
Yeah, 5, I think, mate. Yeah, 5. Yeah.
Champions.
Just everything that day. It was just a special day and a special night. And you know, everyone, I've got photos around the house with all that about that day. And very special. Special boys. You know, that they were. It was a special team and a special group of men. And that's what happened. We had a group of boys that wanted to play for Millwall, and a lot of them become men, and that's what it was all about. That's what it was all about.
Fantastic.
Stuart Nethercott, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us, Stuart. Really, really appreciate it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching you at the Swifts at some point next season as well. Yeah, really looking forward to seeing you do that. Of course, plenty more on the way this week with Acton. Well, don't forget as well, Steve Claridge, Tony Cascarino, got David Ford interviews up as well on the Acast and the iTunes and Spotify. Nick, any housekeeping from you, Nick?
And we've also spoken to Ian Dawes, the old 80s fullback, late 80s fullback. So that's going to be out soon. And we're going to try and get Stuart out ASAP. So great listening for Millwall fans at the moment. So I really appreciate your time today, Stuart.
Wonderful cheers, stuff. Really appreciate cheers, boys. It. Cheers. Keep safe, ladies and gents. Until next time, bye for now.
Achtung Millwall and the Real Millwall Fan Show are the number one Millwall podcast, and we want to hear from you. So get in touch with us. Let us know your thoughts, your views, your rants about all things Millwall. We've got email, achtungmillwall@gmail.com. All one word, achtungmillwall@gmail.com. You can get in touch with us and leave us a voicemail on 0208 144 0232. That's 0208 144 0232. Leave us a voicemail. No human will be involved in the receipt of your message. So give us a shout, tell us what you think about all things Millwall, and the best messages will be read out on air.
Achtung, Mehlball.